Hi, this is John DeLancey, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to Future Imperfect, the first episode of 2019. I am joined with Captain Dodd.
That's right. I have returned from places unknown from the... I can't even remember how they pronounce it. The weird mushroom place, that's where I've been.
The mycelial network.
That's it, the mycelial network, which is such a weird idea and yet such a cool one at the same time.
Well, somebody was doing mushrooms when they thought up the idea, so... No, I'm just joking.
But you don't know at the same time.
I don't. I find it humorous either way. So we've had... almost half a season of Discovery since it's come back for season two.
Yeah, and I guess this episode of Future Imperfect is going to be our season two report cards so far. What's worked, what hasn't worked, and just basically how the series is working as a whole now that we've had a season and a half, more or less, of full Trek so far. How many episodes are proposed to be in this season?
I think 15.
15, okay, so that's not so bad.
Which isn't too bad. I mean, I think it's better than last season. I think last season had 13, maybe. I could be wrong on that count, but I am enjoying season two much more than I enjoyed season one.
Yeah, I will say it's definitely sucked me in a lot more this season. Definitely enjoying a lot of the performances a lot more than I did the first. And the first season seemed to... I would argue almost drag out at times. Like, it took two or three episodes to get going. This one doesn't bore you with the preamble. I mean, yeah, it takes a little while for the whole Red Angel thing to kind of reveal what it's supposed to be. And then there's all the different subplots going out through all the different episodes. But I've been pleasantly surprised so far. The last episode was just aired, as of this recording, 2 weeks ago, where they introduced the Talosians. And how they tie that into the original series. I thought that was kind of a neat callback, even though continuity-wise it doesn't totally line up, but
does. It takes place, I think, 3 years after the Cage, or 5 years or something like that.
Yeah, but at the same time, when Pike is there, he's supposed to be in, like, a wheelchair and on advanced life support, and he decides to stay behind even though he knows it's bullshit.
Actually,
I don't know whether I totally buy that.
No, you're actually incorrect.
Okay,
That does not happen until later.
Oh, okay.
This takes place during Pike's 5-year mission on the Enterprise.
Oh.
When he met the Talosians the first time with Spock and met Vina and everything else, which is actually the original pilot, the Cage, which they did eventually release the entire episode.
Okay.
Later on, it was like a remaster in the 70s. They came out with it. Gene Roddenberry released it. And some pieces are black and white. Some pieces are in color because of the way it was shot. And the parts that were in color were from The Menagerie, which is the episode that recycled the Cage episode, where he's in The Menagerie. It takes place basically 10 years after Pike met the Talosians the first time. So at some point between this part in Discovery and Captain Kirk taking command of the Enterprise, Pike gets his life-debilitating injury.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just basing on how this series runs, I have an inkling of a feeling that they're going to put Pike in the chair by the end of the season.
Probably, which is unfortunate, because I really like Pike. I was reading a couple of reviews of the season overall, and... is it just me? It seems like Pike is pretty much one of the happiest guys in this crew. Have you noticed everybody has a tragic backstory in some way and or form except for Pike? He's like, hey, I'm a go-get-em kind of guy. Everybody else is my childhood sucks or my parents are dead or some variation thereof.
Well, I think it's because they're bringing in the levity of the original series in that with season two. And I think also because Pike... has this different outlook on life, whereas the other ones, and he's also like kind of damaged in the sense that they added in the fact that, you know, he missed out on the war, and so he's a little like butthurt he wasn't involved with the Enterprise. But the same token, like, he was doing his own thing, and that's why we didn't see any of the Constitution class starships like blowing the crap out of the Klingons. And so like, I don't know. I do like the fact that we did get to see the original series uniforms from anybody that comes from the Enterprise, although I was sad to see that they changed into the Discovery uniforms, just because it was kind of a nice nod having it. But it's a Constitution class uniform, from what I've gathered as far as that. But no, I mean, I agree with you on Pike. I think that he's very... uplifting. He's wanting to give people the benefit of the doubt. He's more of a kind of like diplomatic in the sense of like Picard, but like he has no he's very like honor bound in the sense of like Sisko or Janeway, where he's like, I will not leave a, you know, fellow Starfleeter behind. I will, you know, I'll do what's necessary. And so, I mean, it's kind of a nice touch in a polar opposite of what we got with Lorca.
Mm-hmm. One of the relationships I'm enjoying a lot this season is Tilly and Stamets. I just like their chemistry, how they play off. In fact, Tilly's probably in my top five characters in the franchise right now. And that's across everything. I'm really surprised how much she's kind of grown on me, especially when she meets the creature from the my cereal, whatever the fuck it is, network, that weird blob thing and how it ties to her memory of someone she knew growing up and how they're basically besties more or less. And I like how it draws upon her memories and just the thing is like, I made you a promise, I will help you sort of thing. And I'll come across universes to help me or help you should you need me again. And I just thought that was really neat. And just a lot of little character moments that I'm thoroughly enjoying this season. One of the other things I enjoy is Stamets and having the Dr. Hugh, Colbert come back and how he's like, yeah, the one you knew is dead. I'm different and you're going to have to let me go again. And I was thinking, wow, that's some drama. I'm signing up for that. Give me more of that. I mean, I don't like... I don't like seeing romances destroyed, but I'm hoping they can come back together at some point because I think they're a wonderful couple. And when you thought he was going to die in the other universe, I was like, oh, man, they're going to kill him again. That sucks. And then he comes back to our universe and he's kind of this lost person, basically out of time, out of place. Like, I shouldn't be here, but now I have my own life to live yet again. So,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting, but it's kind of reminiscent of the all the other Trek series for the most part, other than the original series, because, you know, you look at TNG, you had Riker and Troy were kind of on and off again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they would each date different people throughout the series. And so, you know, and then so it kind of changed the dynamic. But yet, ultimately, it didn't matter because they ended up back together. And, you know, you had instances like that in DS9 and Voyager as well. And so it's kind of that dynamic that, you know, something's going to happen either by the end of the season or by like sometime in the next season. If they still have the same cast, it's hard to say, because I think that, with Arium being infected with whatever the hell that, virus thing was when Pike and, Ash Tyler were on the shuttlecraft, I think that they're going to, like, more or less outlaw androids on starships until Data. So it'll be like the, you know, because, like, she's kind of a weird cyborg type of thing. And I can't really explain it because, like, she's an android, but she isn't. Because Data is supposedly the first, you know, official android. Or maybe he's the first humanoid-looking android with a positronic.
Maybe he's the first true android. Like, he's the first true AI, whereas maybe she's more of a cyborg as opposed to an android. Maybe there's more meat as opposed to cybernetics. So it's hard to say. Yeah,
which could be. But I'm thinking that they're going to end up offing her if they can't save her. Like, it's really hard to say because at one instance, they can throw a character to the wind and destroy them and remove them, and then at the same time bring them back. So it's kind of, it's really odd at this point, because we've had a couple of close calls with other characters, whether it be Spock,
Saru,
and I think Arium might go by the wayside because they're going to have Spock on their crew now, temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking they may off Arium in that aspect. But I do like how some of the characters are starting to get more of, you know, an upfront role in the series.
Yeah, like they're getting more screen time, more presence. Their roles are actually starting to develop on screen. I'm actually starting to feel something for this cast, something I didn't get a lot of last season. Like, the characters I connected with the most was Stamets and Tilly, and obviously Burnham. Anybody else, it was kind of this season things are starting to develop. Like, we're finally starting to get a feel for this cast. I think Discovery is finally starting to hit where it's supposed to. In fact, I'm a part of a number of different threads about this on Facebook, and my friend Justin, one of the game masters over at Terrible Warriors, has said something along the lines of, if I was going to show someone Star Trek, I'd start them on Discovery and move them forward. And I got to thinking about that the other day, thinking, you know what, that's not bad, because you look at how differently the series were. They're definitely representative of television and its storytelling medium at its time. One of the things that I definitely noticed with this, and this is something is very unique, my wife hates Star Trek The Next Generation, hates Voyager, hates the 90s Treks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet with Discovery, she's like, you know what, this ain't so bad. And I look at just how the storytelling medium has evolved, although we could do with about 100% less lens flares, but whatever. Outside of that, the storytelling medium in Discovery has really evolved. They really have a good team of writers, a good team of directors, cinematographers. It seems like less a show on a boat, because that's what Star Trek, I used to describe it as. It was basically, it's on a submarine, but there happens to be aliens. In this Star Trek Discovery, it seems less military-ish, even though they are on a science/military vessel. It's Trek, but it's not, if that makes any kind of sense to you.
Yeah,
it's modern Trek.
Yeah. And you know, I totally get that. I do. I could see where showing somebody now this series would draw them into the other series, because you would want to know the lore. And in order to understand the rest of the franchise, you know, how this franchise and the other franchise, you know, all the other series tie together, you would want to watch more, even if it's not the same production value.
Yeah, like, this is a good jumping on point where you don't need to be so steeped in lore where, sure, if you know it, it's nice, but if you don't, you don't have to. That's what I like. And that's one thing I found out, too. Watching Discovery Season 2 is very welcoming to a new watcher. Like, sure, it helps to have seen the first season, but you really kind of don't need to in the grand scheme of things, at least in my opinion. Sure, it helps to know the characters, but with season 2, you got a clean new slate. There's the new threats established right out of the door, and it's weird, but it's not so weird you can't understand it. You're not dealing with the Klingon politics. You're not dealing with them ranting and raving about T'Kuvma and the 24 great houses of the Klingon Empire. Basically, all the Klingon bullshit is more or less dealt with by, like, episode 3. Which I'm kind of surprised. They showed severed heads. Really surprised.
Well, it's CBS, and they do use the F-bomb, so...
Yeah, I was like, wow, you just showed a severed baby head. That's pretty friggin' hardcore, even for me.
Well, did you see the thing, though, that the baby was albino as well?
I did, and now he's going to live with some random monks the rest of his life.
Do you know that that is a callback to DS9, where there's an albino Klingon that doesn't associate with the regular Klingons and lives secluded?
I did not know that.
Yeah, and so they purposely basically tied it in because there's really no future history on that either character. And so I think that they've kind of connected the dots there to give it some grounding of, you know, because he was an elderly, like, albino Klingon.
How long do Klingons live?
Well, considering...
Human age?
Well, no, they live, like, Vulcan age.
Okay, so a couple hundred years.
Yeah, so, like, you know, you get Kor, Kang, and Koloth, which were, you know, Kirk's adversaries. They were in DS9.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, and Curzon Dax, or Dax, or the symbiote, anyway, had dealings with them in the 23rd century, too. So, who knows, we may see Dax show up at some point during the show.
That'd be neat.
Because clearly the symbiote was alive then. Some of the things that I predicted a while back, that I have fun going back to from some of my predictions. I predicted that Culver was going to be revived and healed via the Spore Network.
Yep.
And that the, you know, that the fact that Tyler, the hybrid human thing with the Klingon, the Spore Drive will be destroyed / deemed too dangerous to return when they came back from the Prime Universe, or to the Prime Universe. And, you know, they've used it like once this season, and then it was broken because Arium.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they're going to start working on transwarp technology next at some point, like start working on it, because remember, Excelsior is the first ship that had it, but you know, there's like 20, 30 years until that point. So
exactly. They got plenty of time for experimentation, stuff like that. One of the things I'm liking, as well with the predictions, when they brought back Culber, I'm really happy that we're getting a representation of PTSD, because that's basically what he's gone through.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And I do like how he's essentially a new character now, yet we can have the same actor portraying him. I think that's kind of neat.
Well, he was kind of hollow before that. Like, he was very robotic, and you cared about him, but there really wasn't any like meat to the character until he had his neck snapped.
Yeah. I mean, the most you got out of him is, you knew he was, Stamets' lover, husband, or whatever. And then when he comes back, there's just like, this is so fresh in my mind, 'cause I watched this like 2 or 3 hours ago, and he's like, you're going to have to let me go and move forward. And there's something potentially powerful if they play this right. Like, those actors are wonderful. They've got some great chemistry together. They can have some great scenes together. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen with this particular romance, if it ever plays out again, or if it's going to be damaged goods from here on out. Like, I'm really excited for that. And I don't like misery, but I like well-written misery, if that makes any kind of sense.
It adds that gravity to the situation instead of just being, oh, we wrote it for the sake of writing it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want depth to my Star Trek. And now, through modern, like I said, through modern cinema, through modern storytelling, we're getting it. I mean, because we never really got the depth of the emotional relationships in the original Trek. Sure, we saw bits and pieces,
but we never had depth. But you got it between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. Everybody else was kind of sidelined.
Yeah, but I want the emotional love thing. I mean, I watch a lot of TV, like Game of Thrones, and I watch shows where there are genuinely loving relationships, like between Tyrion and Shay, and Robb Stark and his wife, stuff like that. Like, stuff that, like, real love. And I really get that. And I'm getting on Star Trek, I could see the potential for that HBO-like depth of love, that depth of character. And I'm probably way overstating it by saying that, but I see potential, and I love that. And I haven't been this thrilled for a Star Trek series in quite some time. In fact, as much as I was saying off-air, man, I just watched 8 episodes of Star Trek in one day. Man, shoot me in the head. I gotta go back and say, I'm actually excited for a Star Trek series, and now that I'm all caught up, I have no reason not to watch every week. Just, it it's on Thursdays up here in Canada on like the Space Channel. So I'll watch it on Friday mornings when it streams on Crave. But still, point of the matter is, I'm excited to see what can happen this season. Burnham doesn't feel so robotic. I don't like Spock. Spock's kind of a dick, but that's okay. He's also only said like 20 words so far. So,
well, if you remember, he always was kind of a dick.
Yeah, but he had a warmth to him. There was a dickish warmth, a dickish charm, if you will. This one, I don't know yet. But once again, like I said, he's at least said like 20 words. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with him. I'm liking that they introduced all the bridge crew. I can't name them all yet. I'm working on it. I'm actually going to go back and rewatch that episode just so I can name all the people. Like, there's certain people you can tell who I'm attached to. I know their names. But I don't
all
know.
All I know is Detmer.
Which one's he? Comm officer?
She's the one with the piece of metal around her one eye.
Oh, she's the redhead, right?
Yep. Well, yep. Yeah, in the front that drives the ship.
Yeah, she's cool. I like her. She's dead. give it time. Something will happen to her or the blue cyborg chick. Something will happen.
I'm positive that Arium's the cyborg.
Oh, yeah. Something will happen at some point. Or weird alien that snots on people.
Yeah, I'm pretty positive that the robot is going to go somewhere, considering we're going to have more of that, especially because the Red Angel is supposed to be protecting them from that thing that attacked Pike and Tyler in the shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had like some kind of a tachyon, time travel, association with them, and so does the Red Angel. And the Red Angel is somebody in a high-tech spacesuit, basically, that's able to go and help. Basically, it seems like the Red Angel is basically helping the characters evolve into stronger versions of themselves so that they can handle the battle that is coming. And I think that, whatever that may bring, I don't think it's the Borg, although it does kind of reminiscent of that.
Yeah, I kind of got that vibe, too. I'm kind of curious to what it could be. I saw one of my favorite channels on YouTube was theorizing who the Red Angel could be. Just to give a shout-out to this channel, Lore Reloaded is awesome. I love that guy. Check his channel out. He did a theory where he was wondering, could the Red Angel be Archer? Maybe the Temporal Cold War never ended.
Yeah, I saw that one. I saw another one that somebody was saying that it could just be Burnham, just because, you would expect but not expect it to be her.
Mm-hmm. I hope it's not something cheesy like that. I would love it to be Archer. That'd be so friggin' cool. Like, hey, Scott Bakula! Plus, it would give Enterprise a more satisfying conclusion than it was a holodeck program. Ha ha! Anyway.
Wouldn't it be funny if it was Jean-Luc Picard?
That would be cool. Hell, you want to give your series a kick in the ass? Here is good old Patrick Stewart in a one-off cameo for the series. That'd be badass. But anyway, that's just us the kind of spitballing here. But no, I think as far as the report card goes for this season, I'm pleased with the production value. I like how they're handling Section 31. I'd like to know where I've seen that Captain Leland before, because the actor looks so familiar. I think he's been on maybe Walking Dead or something.
I can't remember where he came from, but...
He's so familiar!
Yeah, I'm looking him up right now. Who is that guy? He's Alan Van Spring.
And what's some of the stuff he's been in?
He is from... He looks like he's been in like some cop procedural programs, but...
I could believe it.
He was in Saw 3. He was in Diary of the Dead. He was in...
That's where I know him from, Diary of the Dead. He's the dickhead army guy who tells them to get off the bus.
He was in Shadowhunters, Rain, He's in Immortals. He was in Flashpoint, The Tudors.
So a lot of Canadian stuff.
Yeah. Degrassi.
He must live in Toronto.
Earth Final Conflict. I think that's where I recognize him most from, I think. I didn't watch it, but I remember seeing like the images from it. But anyways, yeah, he's from Calgary. But anyways, it's kind of interesting what they're doing with his character and with Georgiou, and that she's constantly upstaging him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they're going to spin off the Section 31 show, is like basically after this season of Discovery, which is no different than what they did in Arrow. You know, after the second season, they spun off to the Flash, and or the third season of that anyway. But they'll have, you know, when season 3 of Discovery starts, we'll get, you know, Section 31 with Georgiou, and Leland won't be in the picture, I have a feeling, because he'll probably be dead.
Oh, yeah, she's totally going to kill him.
Or Starfleet's going to remove him, because he's constantly looking incompetent whenever he has a meeting with the brass, and Georgiou isn't, which she'll probably be the reason why Section 31's more of this shadowy entity that that we get to see the character in DS9 becoming.
Mm-hmm.
We've already gotten to see the communicator badge, like TNG, with Ash Tyler.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a neat callback to that. I was thinking, oh, that's kind of cool when I saw it. In fact, I was actually looking, totally side story, I was looking on ThinkGeek tonight, and I saw all the different comm badges, and I seriously thought about buying a Section 31 one tonight, because I thought it'd be just neat to wear on top of my N7 sweater. But I was like, oh, that's so badass. And I haven't bought Star Trek memorabilia in quite some time, but I seriously thought about it.
I bought stuff last year, and honestly, like, if I was going to get any new ones, it would be the new Captain badge from Discovery. It would be the Section 31. And then I would get a new Voyager one, because the one I have kind of broke.
My Voyager one's a fridge magnet right now.
Yeah, mine. I have all of mine like in a nice case, because I took them to the Star Trek trivia night thing that I did a while back. But yeah, I mean, I see things going a little bit, you know, in different directions as they begin spinning things off, and they've even cast a couple actors in the Picard series already.
Mm-hmm. So things are looking good for the future of Trek. I hear there's even a new animated series in the works. There's the one from Seth MacFarlane, and then there's the one that's aimed towards kids.
Well, it's not Seth MacFarlane. It's the guy that did Rick and Morty.
Oh, Dan Harmon. Sorry, I got them confused.
Yeah, yeah, because Seth MacFarlane is doing basically TNG with the Orville.
Yeah.
Which has been pretty good, by the way.
I know another show, but I have to marathon over the course of a couple of days.
we'll wait for that one. We're, you know, we're doing some other stuff with this. But yeah, they cast Evan Evagoria for the Picard series, who I guess is an Australian actor.
Mm-hmm.
Not too familiar with him. He's so new, I can't even find an IMDb. And then they've added Santiago Cabrera and Michelle Hurd to the Picard cast, which, again, I've not heard of any of them. Doesn't mean anything, but it's shaping up to be interesting, just that we've got casting notices and all these things coming out now that are starting to leak. And I'm looking forward to basically what they've said is going to be a 10-hour movie of Picard.
I'm hoping we'll see some kind of at least a teaser trailer by Comic-Con. That's my prediction. I'll make that right now. We'll see something. We'll at least see the empty captain's chair. We'll see a new bridge design. And then we'll hear the whistle and captain on the bridge. And you'll hear Patrick Stewart go, engage, or some bullshit like that. Well, guarantee we'll see something by Comic-Con.
Well, he's not going to be a captain of the Enterprise or a starship anymore, from what they've let loose on this show.
We'll see something. It's because You've got to hook fans in somehow.
Well, he's going to commandeer a ship. Well, people are going to be hooked because it's Patrick Stewart. And because yeah. it's going to be the late 24th century, early 25th century here that we're playing around with. And so it's going to play in that nice gray area of Star Trek Online.
Which there was a video I sent to Steve a couple of days ago talking about Star Trek Online. We'll talk about Star Trek Online again at some point on this show because I didn't realize how much that game has changed over the years, and I have to change my opinion on it simply with there's a lot of new information I didn't know. So
I told you the game's good. It's got a lot of problems, but it's good. Yeah,
but it's supported by like 3,000 people.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. But anyway, we digress. But if you want to check out that video on YouTube, I think it's called Death of a Game, Star Trek Online. The game's not dead, not by any stretch of the imagination. They just launched some new content in the last little bit.
Well, the
Mirror
the
Discovery,
part,
I think it was called.
Yeah, it's the Mirror Universe now. They've done the Mirror Discovery now. My only gripe when they do those little section things is when they did the TNG thing where they came out with the Enterprise D and everything, and they did this whole run on the Nexus and got LeVar Burton to reprise his role, and they started out with a storyline and they just dropped it. You took the villain out, and then like they didn't really explain anything more about that. It was like a one-off, and I was like, okay, so what was this character? Because they shrouded him so you couldn't tell who he was, and I was like so confused. Looking at it, it kind of reminded me of like a Q entity, but not. And but yeah, I mean, the game, while I enjoy it, they keep changing things in it. And they've even recently announced that in April they're going to gut the Foundry out, which is what lets fans create their own episodes.
That'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, and like everything's getting so ridiculously expensive with some of the stuff. Like you can spend, you know, 30 real dollars to get this like 3,000 Zen like point ship, which ultimately like none of the ships matter in the game. It depends on what you equip them with. So like, they each have their benefits and they have their like perks. You know, whether it be a cloak or. If you get the Dreadnought, you know, Enterprise D with the triple nacelle, you can cloak it and you can do the saucer separation.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in the show, which is cool. I use it a lot like that.
But isn't it basically the best example of pay to win? Because a game like that is supported by a few whales. So to keep the whales happy, they have kind of made it microtransaction heavy.
Oh, it's super microtransaction heavy, like on every front, but you can play the game and it doesn't like, cause ultimately the story is you, it doesn't impact you whatsoever unless you play PvE or PvP. If you do PvE, you're fine. Like it doesn't matter.
As long as you're not fighting actual people.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you're doing that, like there's a lot of scenarios where you work with other people in the missions, and you know when you play the group missions, the endeavors as they call them now, and it ultimately is just a team effort. It doesn't matter. So I mean, I go in there with my Kelvin Universe Constitution class Enterprise, and that thing rocks in the game. But yeah, I mean, it's good overall. I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to sustain it, other than the fact that CBS is backing it.
Yeah, like I was surprised, honestly, how low the player count was. I didn't I figured it would have been easily 10,000. When I found it was under 4, I'm thinking, holy shit, that's surprising to me. So, but still, the fact that it still kept going, the fact that they do engage the fans, the fact that they are keeping it up with Mirror of Discovery and the current Star Trek stuff, that means CBS is still backing it, means they still believe in it, at least somewhat. So that's a good sign, at least for the foreseeable future of the game. So we'll have to see what happens with it in the near future.
I just wish we could get like a giant timeline dump from the game before like they crap can the game, because you know eventually it's going to come.
Oh, God, yeah. Because the age of the MMO, the fact that it has survived as long as it has is a testament to its survivability of its IP. Because there aren't that many MMO games left in town, Star Trek being among them. It's a fringe one, but it's still very popular.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to, you know, eventually a new Trek game, but you know, I'm fine with this one for the time being. Like, I didn't even realize that DC Universe Online was still around.
Yeah,
I'm totally surprised. And it's microtransactions, like, worse than Star Trek Online. I don't even know anybody that plays it still, but it's still amazing that it's still around.
Yeah, that'll be something we'll have to talk about on Altered Geek, is the MMO scene, because I've only really played a couple of them, like The Matrix Online. I played Star Wars for a little bit, and I'm the only one I haven't tried is World of Warcraft. If they do D&D online again, maybe I'll give it a whirl. I know there's one called Sword Coast Legends, but I just don't care. But anyway, I digress. So back to Star Trek. I'd say season two midterm report card, I'm going to give them a solid B+. I think they've done some wonderful stuff with the show, wonderful character arcs, great acting on the whole, great production value. Minuses, why you didn't get an A. I think some characters are a little weak. Like, I'm looking at you, Spock, specifically. But
we're only one episode into him speaking.
Yeah, this is true. That's why I'm giving it a solid B+ so far. I'm very happy with what I've seen. There doesn't seem to be too many filler type episodes. Things are always moving forward, and can't wait to see what else happens with the rest of the season.
I'm going to give it probably the same score. The only reason is because, like, there's still some unresolved threads that I'm waiting to see happen. And I'm waiting as far as, like, I have a feeling we're going to see, like, a tag team effort against the aliens with the Enterprise and the Discovery at some point. But that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, I mean, I enjoy the series. There are some weak characters. There are some, like, weak moments. Overall, it's been pretty strong. And the growth and evolution of certain characters that, you know, previously were kind of glossed over in season one because you had the whole Lorca and Mirror Universe and the Klingon thing going on, which was just, like, honestly too much. But like any Star Trek series, the first season typically
is the roughest
because they're kind of trying to get you at, you know, your attention, and at the same time trying to establish, like, this whole band of merry men, as it were, and you know, get you invested, and that's ultimately the difficult thing, plus getting the story off the ground and things of that nature. So, like, it's, I think season two is definitely stronger. I think it's probably among the levels of, like, TNG, you know, season three and on, like, as far as, like, getting stronger, kind of glossing over that first two seasons, and some of the other ones as well, like Voyager and DS9. I think, you know, TOS is kind of its own thing because it was just totally episodic the entire time, unless it was a two-parter, and really nothing had consequence on the next episode. Whereas, like, any of the other series had it to some degree. This one definitely has no filler, which is ultimately the best thing about it, is we don't have throwaway episodes.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So yeah, I mean, I give it a solid B+ as well. Just kind of waiting until some things evolve into their next part of the season.
So that's pretty much going to do it for this episode of Future Imperfect. What we're going to talk about next time, I'm not entirely sure, but there's tons of Trek out there for us to consume. There we could talk about some of the sciences, starships, alien races, whatever. We have tons of stuff to talk about. We'll probably be back in a few weeks to do so. So make sure you're listening here to the GeekCast Radio Network and, of course, thisweekingeek.net. Let me see. I was going to say, Mr. Spock, take us out. But no, you're not at the con. That's a load of horse crap.
No, but I think that what we could cover, though, is, like, some of the Star Trek Online stuff once you've gotten a little familiarized with it. And then, you know, again, like, kind of recapping some of the Discovery episodes since where we're at right now.
One of the things I really want to talk about is I want to talk about the Star Trek stuff in other media, and that more specifically boils down to the Modiphius Star Trek role-playing game stuff. They just released the Science Division book, which came out in the middle of February, and they actually talk about the Science Division, Medical Division, but they also have an entire section on the Q and the Q Continuum and how to work those characters into your role-playing game sessions, which is infinitely interesting when you really kind of read into it. Basically, how to include God into your games and how to make it interesting and threatening at the same time.
But what does he need with the starship?
He needs to get to the center of who knows what, because God. In fact, I kind of wonder if they ever address that at some point. Anyway, just thinking out loud.
But I think another thing that we could cover in a future episode as well is the fact that that documentary for DS9, What We Left Behind, looking back at Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
Was recently acquired by Shout Studios, which is Shout Factory.
So we'll see that release probably before the end of the year, I'm guessing.
Well, what's going to be interesting is they plan to release it across multiple platforms, including theatrical by the year's end.
Interesting. That'll be kind of cool. It'll be a limited theatrical engagement, but that is still very cool.
So that might be something that people will be interested in as well, because I know I am, and it's co-directed by Io Studebaker of DS9. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do, because it's going to be a lot of interviews, a lot of, you know, some of it's been remastered, some of it's just new, or plans that they had for season 8, including a new starship to replace the Defiant.
Okay.
And some other things that they had kind of in the pipeline there, if they'd been allowed to continue. So I'm very interested in seeing what happens with that, and of course getting the DVD or Blu-ray. So without further ado, take us out.
I don't know.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.